You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Always good to catch up with this guy. Does a great job covering the Seahawks for ESPN.com, and he is back with us. Our buddy Brady Henderson is here. Brady, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going? I'm guessing I'm like Jim right now. I'm eagerly awaiting the start of the PGA Championship tomorrow and talking some Seahawks in the meantime. How are you guys?
Yeah, please don't get him started, Brady, okay?
Yeah.
Nobody needs that. Nobody
I'll bet Brady listens to the golf show 9 o'clock Saturdays here on 710 ESPN.
I'll bet you he doesn't, but nice plug. Brady, let's get into your story about you wrote a good piece on Russell Wilson. Before we get into what you wrote about him, any idea why this whole Mr. Unlimited thing is trending all of a sudden, why people are responding to something that's 2 years old?
No, I had to check his social media accounts because I remembered seeing that a few years ago, and I didn't know if this was a part two of the Mr. Unlimited video or if this was just somehow getting dug up from a couple years ago. So yeah, I don't know why that suddenly came about because that was a while ago that he posted that.
Yeah, kind of odd. All right, well, let's get into what you wrote. A great story. You can check it out at ESPN.com. The headline reads, "Why Not You? Late Father Still Inspires Seattle Seahawks Russell Wilson." It's a really, really well-written story. And for people that haven't had a chance to read it yet, Brady, just give them a quick synopsis of what's in there.
Yeah, it's the story is about how Russell Wilson's dad shaped him. And you know, anybody who knew his dad and who knows Russell will tell you that he was the most influential person in Russell's life. And they would also tell you that it's really no surprise that Russell has accomplished everything that he has. His dad was just a very ambitious person, a big dreamer was the way that Russell's brother described him, and really instilled in this belief in Russell that he could be whatever he wanted to be. And, you know, that to not let people's doubts get in the way of what he wanted to accomplish. So, you know, Russell was talking even before he had made a cent off of, you know, professional sports. He was talking about, you know, owning a part of an NFL team. And so that just kind of gives you an idea of how lofty the goals that he had before he even made it. And I think his dad, as the story examines, his dad was a big reason for that.
Yeah, Brady, you know, you've interviewed him and talked to him a number of times. I just, you know, going back through, so everybody's talking about, oh, it's cringeworthy and corny. I love it. And I feel like, and Bob put it really well, that he's very comfortable in his own skin, and he's kind of found his way, which is difficult, man. I mean, you know, you come in as a rookie and you're supposed to be a leader and you're trying to do things the right way. And then, you know, and he goes through you know, a divorce, and then finds just a lovely person in Sierra, and they've got this family. I just, anytime anybody ever criticizes Russell or says anything like that, I'm always like, are you kidding me, man? It just seems like he has done a really good job with a lot of money, a lot of fame, playing probably the most important position in any sport, and he comes off as just a genuine guy to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you were, you know, running the Seahawks, I don't know if you could ask for anybody to handle themselves better and to, you know, represent the organization better than he has. I mean, he's never, you know, gotten in any sort of trouble, anything like that. He's just a perfect citizen, just a world-class guy. And, you know, I think people, I'm with you there. It seems like people want to have it both ways because they say, well, you know, they knock Russell for being, you know, scripted or robotic or whatever in the press conferences. And then, you know, when he sort of lets his hair down and he acts goofy like that, and people criticize him for that. So if you want him to be who he is, you got to let him be who he is. So I'm with you. The criticism seems a little unfair to me in that regard.
Hey, Brady, you know me. You've known me for several years now, and I'm always giving you a hard time about something. But I want to tell you. I want to tell you right now, I want to give you a compliment. That story was really well done. I just really enjoyed it from beginning to end, and the reporting was terrific. The writing was terrific. So job well done. I'm just curious how that story came about and how the access was. Was it pretty easy to get access, or did you need to do something special for that?
Well, first of all, thank you, Jim. And as you were saying that, I was waiting for the pause and then the dig, because that's usually how it works.
That's how nice guy Jim works.
No, there was no sucker punch at all.
No. Brady plugged the golf show, so I'm not going to come at you.
I think Bob plugged the golf show, but anyways, the way it worked, I actually had that story in mind for Father's Day, just because of the obvious tie in there, and it was also. Father's Day, I think, was within a week or so of the 10-year anniversary of when his dad passed away. And so there was obviously a timeliness to it then. But I think, the timeliness still exists now. And, the new lead to the story ended up being how he named, him and Sierra named their new son. The middle name was named after Russell's dad, Harrison. So, the way it came about, it was there was a lot of people who were very eager to, talk about Harrison and talk about the role that he played in Russell's life. And, that's why I was able to talk to so many people for the story, is that everybody was very willing and very gracious with their time.
Brady, have you seen the shift in the perception of Russell Wilson nationally? We this is the time of year where there's a list for everything, right? The top 10 quarterbacks, top 10 running backs, greatest head coaches, blah, blah, blah. And anytime it involves a quarterback, Russell's name is near the top in every one of these national, not local, but national lists. And it feels like, even on the NFL, NFL Network's top 100, he's number two. So it's hard to still have that chip, and nobody pays attention to the Seattle. We're tucked up in the, in the corner of the United States, and nobody's aware of how great he is. Those days are gone, aren't they? I mean, it's just, when did you start to see this shift in terms of him being acknowledged as one of the great players in the game?
I think it's gone in accordance with how much more that offense and really that team has gone through him. And, I understand the sentiment earlier in his career. He had the great defense, the LOB, and all the Hall of Famers on that side of the ball. And, that's not to say that he was just your average game manager. I mean, I watched that 2013 season, and he was making plays that not very many guys can make. And so I'm not saying that he was a game manager then, but more of that offense has gone through him. And also, I mean, as the defense has, taken a step back, he has really had to account for, surely had to mask a lot of mistakes. And, it's been harder to build a team around him as his contract has, taken up more of the salary cap. The challenge every team has that pays a quarterback like that. And so he has more than lived up to his end of the bargain. And, they've... The secret last year, I think, was just the continuation of that. And, just imagine where that team would be without Russell, because he is, like I said, he has really had to carry them a lot more so than he did earlier in his career.
Hey, Brady, if I asked you to construct a 20 best players on the Seahawks football team, would you put in the top 20 a kicker? Would you ever do that?
Well, no, but that's not out of any sort of disdain, because I would just kind of put them in like a category of their own. Like the NFL top 100, we're talking about, is this player better than that player? And they don't even play the same position. It's always hard for me to wrap my head around that. Like, who is a better football player? But, I wouldn't include a kicker on that list, just out of principle, not out of any sort of dislike for kickers.
Okay, well, I don't want to name names, but these two clowns both put kickers, people who strike a football with their feet, in their top 20. But let me ask you this. Who's the second best player on this team, do you think? I mean, we all pretty much agree it's boring. It's definitely going to be Russell Wilson. But who do you think is now the second best player?
Boy, well, Bobby, I would have said Bobby Wagner a week and a half ago, and now I think you can maybe make the case that Jamal Adams is, just because he is probably, he's a younger player, and he's probably closer to the prime of his career. And I'm not saying that Bobby's over the hill. I mean, he was a first-team All-Pro, I think, for the fifth straight year last year. But, I would say if it's not Bobby, it's Jamal Adams. And, you can talk all you want about, did the Seahawks, give up too much for Jamal Adams? And I mean, they gave up a lot. They also think that they have one of the best players in it. So if you think of it less in terms of position and more in terms of you know, what impact he can have on a game, then the trade makes a lot more sense and the compensation makes a lot more sense. But yeah, I think if it's not Bobby, you know, based on what I'm hearing about Jamal Adams and how highly I think of him, then yeah, I think it could be him.
Hey, Brady, how do you think the Seahawks will use him? Because I'm looking at the Jets, a number of snaps where he played all over the place. Strong safety, free safety, in the slot, on the line of scrimmage. He even had snaps at cornerback. So where do you think they'll use him the most?
Yeah, I mean, all over. And from one talent evaluator was like a chess piece, just because of that idea that you can use him in multiple ways. I think he's mostly the time you're going to see him in the box, and you're going to see him, you know, just because he's such an aggressive player that I think he's best when he's around the ball. I think as opposed to, you know, you're probably not going to see him play a ton of deep safety like you saw Earl Thomas play. You may see him there some, but I think he's going to be more in the box. I think, you know, I've been told that, you know, when they go into nickel, they feel like, you know, they can sort of use him as kind of a third linebacker almost, and bring in an actual nickel back like Marquise Blair or Ugo Amadi. And then, you know, the pass rushing stuff, that was one thing, you know, I was interested to see, and I am interested to see, you know, how much they use him there, just because, you know, he racked up a ton of sacks, obviously because he's got great pass rush skills. He was also, you know, he was cut loose, you know, in a defense under Greg Williams that really loves to blitz a lot. And, you know, we know that Pete Carroll's defense doesn't really do that as much, or at least traditionally has not done that as much. But, you know, I wonder if you know, now that they have a weapon like that in Jamal Adams, and by the way, as we all know, they also have a need to, you know, boost their pass rush. I think you could see them use him more in that way than you've ever seen them use any defensive back like that.
How do you see Marquise Blair's role on this team? What do you think he's doing? Because that move obviously has an impact on how much time he may see out there. Do you think he's depth? Do you think they try to use him in the nickel? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they try to use him in the nickel. And if they had not traded for Jamal Adams, and if it was just Bradley McDougald and Quandre, I really think that Blair would have given Bradley McDougald a run for that starting job at strong safety. So obviously that's going to be Jamal Adams' position. And yeah, I think he's going to be there in the mix in nickel. And I could definitely see them, just based on what I've heard, definitely see them kind of going with, I guess, you know, a committee there at nickel. And, you know, when it's just based on matchups. So when it's, you know, the traditional slot receiver, you're probably going to have Ugo Amadi cover that guy. If it's a bigger wide receiver, or, you know, maybe an athletic tight end, you know, maybe you have Marquise Blair, who is a bigger body like that, and he's a strong position. But, you know, I think the scout will tell you that he's fluid enough and he's quick enough that, you know, he could cover a bigger receiver in the slot, which you don't see a lot of strong safeties do that. But I think they think he's got the athleticism to do that. But I think it's going to be a mix of those guys, of Blair and Amadi, based on the matchups.
Brady, you know, the more I think about it and talk about KJ Wright, the more I think that he's just so incredibly valuable to this defense. But, you know, you could make the case that, hey, they've listed actually Bruce Irvin as a linebacker. He could play the strong side. You know, you've got Jordan Brooks, you've got Cody Barton, but I just don't think there's any way you got to have KJ Wright on this team. What do you think, what you're hearing from Pete? I mean, he looks like, you know, from the outside, that maybe he would be one of those guys that it's expendable. But, you know, watching last year and just knowing what he's meant throughout his career to this team, it just becomes more obvious the more I look at it that they have to have KJ Wright on this team. What are you hearing? What are you thinking?
Yeah, he really helped his case with the year he had last year, and not only you know, playing 16 games, coming off the 2018 season where he had that knee injury that bothered him for most of the year. Playing 16 games, I guess 18 games, that was an accomplishment enough. And then playing as well as he did, you know, setting like career highs in tackles and interceptions. So that was a big year for him. I am not convinced, I'm not 100% convinced that he would have still been on the team for the second year of his contract, meaning this year, had he not had such a team. I mean, you do look at the numbers there, and I think you do kind of have to wonder, with the combination of the numbers, the fact that they spent a first-round pick on a guy who plays the same position as him, Will, linebacker, and also the contract with, I think it's a $10 million cap hit, then, yeah, I do think part of that that was already paid in March. And typically, those are put in there to basically act as, the agent and the player want those roster bonuses in there to act as, you know, kind of a deadline for the team to say, you know, if you're going to cut me, then you probably want to do it before this date. Otherwise, if you cut me after paying me that $1 million roster bonus, then you basically just threw $1 million down the toilet. So the fact that he's still on the roster after they paid him that bonus, I think that tells me that he's more likely safe than not, but it is a fair question.
Yeah. Okay, Brady, I hope you know this.
In the big salary.
Oh, sorry, Brady, you were still talking there. Can you find a spot on your houseboat where you get better reception? You're going in and out on us.
Oh, boy, am I really? Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm back to giving you a hard time, Brady.
Yeah, let's walk outside. We've got to hook up like a Campbell soup can and string it underneath Lake Union and run it to the studio there.
Okay. All right, well, I'm pretty sure that you're a Seahawks insider, so I'm going to really respect this next answer, and I'm going to hold you to it. We all know the Seahawks added Jamal Adams. They had Bruce Irvin, Mayoa, Taylor, and Robinson in the draft to help with the pass rush. Do you think at the end of the season, when we look back, they're going to have a better pass rush or better run defense? I'm looking for improvement in both, but which one do you think will be the most improved?
I will say the pass rush will be more improved, and you know, a big part of their pass rush is the fact that, you know, Jaron Reed is going to be there for presumably a full season. And I guess as I think about it now, I'm kind of doubting myself just because he's also been a pretty good run defender. And that was, you know, not having him for those six games, I'm sure hurt their run defense. But, you know, right now, just with the way that, you know, their defensive tackle depth looks, you know, I do think that's a position they're going to have to add to, because behind Jaron Reed and behind Puna Ford, there's really not a ton. And so, I guess that's a good question, but I guess I'll say pass rush, just because there's really nowhere to go but up from them from what they had last year.
Hey, Brady, where were you at on this whole Antonio Brown thing? We haven't talked to you in quite a while, so I'm curious your take on it. Obviously, I don't think it's going to happen. I want no part of the guy. But do you buy that there's legitimate interest? I mean, obviously they're going to talk about it, but would you think he'd have any positive impact in this locker room? We know what he can do physically, but just him, the individual, where were you with him?
Yeah, I think there's a couple questions there. It's such a tough subject because of his history there, and it's some of the allegations there are pretty ugly. And, you know, I think that, you know, you could potentially, if they were to sign Antonio Brown, I mean, the size of the risk would really be dependent on the size of the guarantee, you know, how much guaranteed money that they gave him. And if there's not a big market for him because of his history, you know, they could potentially sign him to a deal that would allow them to walk away at the first sign of trouble. So the potential risk is really only as big as the amount of guaranteed money. I think the other issue is, as an organization, do you want to align yourself behind a guy who has been accused of what he's been accused of? And, it's like I don't even want to say it out loud, but I have to because we're talking about it. But he was accused of sexual assault. And I think that is something that the organization takes very seriously, as you would hope that they would. And I think especially over the last few years. And so I've written before that, you know, the only way I really see that happening is if it's a situation where he somehow gets cleared of those allegations. Maybe the accuser comes out and says that it didn't happen, or maybe he's somehow cleared in another way. And otherwise, I just have a really hard time seeing them sign him while he still stands accused of what he's accused of.
Yeah, I agree with you. And not only that, Brady, I mean, we were talking about earlier, what if DK Metcalf gets 12 targets and Lockett gets 9 or 10 and he gets 3? I mean, you think that guy's not going to cause a problem in the locker room? And then, you know, another guy who's kind of on the other side of it, guy has a hard time, you know, staying in the league, is Josh Gordon. But, you know, different story there, right? Because, I mean, he, like Bob says, you know, he really, he just, he hurts himself. But how serious do you think they're going to be about Josh Gordon? Because you can, you know, kind of wrap your mind around that much more easily than bringing in Antonio Brown.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have been hearing, you know, before Pete Carroll made his comments earlier this week, but, that there is, that they do have legitimate interest in Josh Gordon. And I really think that there are people in that building who would prefer Gordon over Antonio Brown. And the big reason being that, you know, there's a big known, there's less unknown with Gordon. I mean, he was there for, what, 6 weeks last year, really made a strong impression, on the, you know, in the locker room. And from everything I've been told, was not an issue. I mean, obviously the fact that he tested positive and he was no longer there, I mean, that was an issue in the fact that he wasn't available. But before that, he showed up. He got his work in. He was well respected in the locker room and was not, you know, the problem that you tend to associate, you know, with those, you know, big name, sometimes diva wide receivers. He was not that. And so, you also know, you know, how he's going to fit into the offense. You know that he's probably not going to be a guy who, like you said, would complain about targets there. So, the risk there would be, you know, that he has another relapse and he's not there. But I think as far as the team is concerned, that would really be no different than a guy getting injured. And actually, the difference would be that you wouldn't have to pay him because guys don't get paid while they're suspended, whereas they do when they go on injured reserve. So the risk would actually be minimal when you think about it, because it would just be like he's not there anymore. He wouldn't be a risk to be a divisive figure like Antonio Brown would.
Hey, last thing, Brady, that I got for you here. With Jamal Adams coming in, the Seahawks giving away two of their first-round picks the next 2 years. Do you look at it as being Super Bowl or bust type of year this year, because Schneider won't have as much to work with next year in the draft?
I wouldn't quite go that far. I was on with Danny and Paul the other day, and Danny asked me if, you know, do they need to win the NFC West to validate that trade? And I think that might be a better way of looking at it, more so than Super Bowl or bust. And as we've seen, you know, when they win the NFC West and they get a first round play, they're playing at home and or getting a bye in the playoffs, then you tend to like their chances. I do think that it definitely, this is kind of a departure from the philosophy that they've had. You know, you always hear John Schneider talk about wanting to be a consistent championship caliber football team. And the way I always take that is that he's thinking as much about the future, you know, the long-term health of the franchise, as he is the here and the now. And this seems like a little bit of a departure from that, you know, where you're trading two first round picks. It seems like you're placing a little bit more of an emphasis on the now. And so I would say NFC West or bust as opposed to Super Bowl or bust.
Brady, we always appreciate it, man. Take care out there. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
There you go. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. Want to thank him and John Clayton for joining us on the program. If you missed anything, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, then click on our picture. It's right there waiting for you. We got the Mariners pregame coming up. Marco Gonzalez gets the start tonight. First pitch at 6:40. We'll be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.